you back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Thursday, August 11th. Welcome to Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host. Welcome for our conversation today about college football, all things college football. And I'm telling you, I've had enough. I've had enough of the narratives and ESPN writing stories. So we're going to settle a debate. I'm going to settle it. Like, end the fucking discussion. Mic drop. Game over. The best receiver group and receiver in college football entering the year, right? That doesn't mean at the end of the year there might not be someone better. But right now, as we stand today, I'm going to tell you who's the best receiver in college football and fucking why. Not just like, oh, he had 17 touchdowns. He's the best. No. We're going to talk about breaking down the film. We're going to talk about exactly why this person is the best receiver in college football. Also going to talk about some Tennessee recruiting with the five-star quarterback Nico and the class they are building around him. Also going to talk about USC has some interesting stuff going on with their NIL. And then Chris has brought another segment, Coach Speak. What does it all mean? Like, we're going to break down some Ryan Day press quotes to give you some insight into what he's actually trying to tell you. But Chris, before we get there, I have to mention our partner, MyBookie. They've been a partner with the show for 3 years. We've had an unbelievable relationship, and they're the by far the best online gambling site out there. So if you go to MyBookie.ag, use promo code Menace, they'll deposit match up to $1,000. So you deposit $500, they give you $500 free. Or if you're a big bank baller, throw $1,000 and they'll give you $1,000 free to gamble. And I don't know about you, but we got NFL football this weekend, Chris. Tonight, we got the Giants, Patriots, Titans, Ravens. The Browns play the Jaguars. Might get our first win of the year. So if you want to throw some money on preseason football, props, anything like that. And as we get into season, I will be giving you parlays to play. My bookie is the place to do it. So the promo code's right underneath me on YouTube. And as you listen to the podcast, the promo code is Menace. Type in that promo code. You get a free deposit match up to $1,000. I'm telling you, one, it's just a lot of fun to even if it's just a little bit of money. I'm telling you, throw $20 on a two-team, three-team parlay on MyBookie, and you'll enjoy the game 100 times more. It's a way to enjoy football on a new level. So I wanted to mention that because they have been so gracious to partner with us and become the official sports book of Menace to Sports, Chris. So I wanted to say that. And also, while we're here talking about it, part of our VIP subscription model on Patreon, you see the quote there, all the tiers. I'm not going to bore you with the details every single day, but Chris's Corner, the first episode just went out yesterday to the public. There'll be two of those a week on Tuesday and Thursday. Every Tuesday's episode is only exclusively for subscribers. So go to patreon.com/menace2sports and get Chris's Corner, get my exclusive shows and our exclusive shows. And then also you'll get my gambling picks on there when we get into season. So go check that out, different tiers. Now that all that housekeeping is out of the way, Chris, is it housekeeping or house cleaning?
Housekeeping, I think.
Okay, housekeeping is out of the way, Chris, let's get to the show, man.
Let's get to it.
How's it going, Chris? How's your Thursday?
Oh, it's going great, man. NFL's here. Obviously, like, I love NFL football, even though it's just preseason, it is football. I do want to throw up this super chat right before we get into things, just because our guy Ty threw in five before the show even started, or Trey, excuse me. Trey asked, my friend is a huge Falcons fan. Were they idiots for selecting Drake London over Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave? I'll let you give your thoughts on this. I mean, I think so, but obviously the story's yet to be written.
I mean, They absolutely were. I watched Drake London and he never got open. Now, he's a really good player. He's a big receiver. He's got great contested catchability. He's got good ball skills. Like, I really like him as a player. I hate when questions like this get asked, because when I answer them honestly, it sounds like I'm shitting on one of the players. Like, I think he's a really good player, but he's not better than Jameson Williams, than Chris Olave, or Garrett Wilson. They absolutely swung and missed on that pick. And that doesn't mean he's not going to be a good player, but they could have gotten a better player. You look at what Chris Olave is doing in camp, even Garrett Wilson, Jameson Williams, obviously coming back from an ACL, but he was the best receiver in college football last year. So if you told me they picked him over Jameson Williams because of injury concern, I would buy it. But over Olave and over Wilson, I can't justify that after studying all four of them at all.
Yeah. And, you know, Drake London has looked good in camp. But Chris Olave has looked great in camp.
Yeah, like, because he's a great player. He's a better player.
Yeah, I know you saw that clip. He had a little bit of dog in him. I've never seen him throw the ball to a player. I was like, all right.
Listen, you can't go to zone six and leave a cat. You can't do it. The culture's too strong.
I love it. I'm 100% here for it. All right, Zach, I'm ready to get into today's show. I do want to lead with this, man. So there's that freaks list that comes out on whatever every year, The Athletic. And the number two freakiest athlete, they just give you the freakiest college athletes kind of in the football world. And there's some freaks on there every year. The one for Ohio State coming in at number two was Marvin Harrison. They referenced his size, his athleticism, his twitchiness. Additionally, they had these workout numbers on him, which I thought were insane. He benched 380 pounds this offseason, doing 22 reps at 225. He clocked a 3.94 pro shuttle and did 10.9 on the broad jump. Zach.
Crazy.
What?
Crazy. I mean, he's long, he's athletic, he's explosive. Here's the reality. When I saw that, and from what I've heard, he's a freak of nature. I think we all can agree on that now, just from rumors and hype and offseason hype. Right. And he had a good Rose Bowl game, but 22 reps on 225 right now, last year would have been the top at the receiver position at the combine. The top was 20 in the combine, just, you know, back in the spring. So he would have been number one at the combine on 225 reps. 3.94 would have been number one at the combine. The fastest time in the pro shuttle was 4.07 at the combine. 10.9 broad jump would have been seventh at the combine. They had some freaky times. You get some 11 footers. 11.4 was the highest, which is fucking leaping. And 23 miles per hour on their Zephyr report, right, is absurd, because the fastest person to ever run in the NFL on a clock was Tyreek Hill at 23.24 miles per hour. That means Marvin Harrison is moving as fast as Tyreek Hill has, as fast as his fastest, as fast as he's ever run in a game. So you talk about freaky. That is beyond freaky, because Tyreek Hill's built like a little ball of muscle, right? Like he's a shorter slot, and he's just like, his neck goes like this, right? Like, he just looks like a sprinter.
Marvin Harrison, cramps got to be crazy, man.
Marvin Harrison Jr. doesn't look, I mean, he looks like lean, thin, not thin, but like long and slender. Like he is a freak of nature, and I hate comparisons, but it's Randy Moss-esque. The way he looks, right? Just long arms, long levered, can run. Now, the side caveat that I have to throw in there is Mickey Marotti has a kind of a reputation of inflating numbers a little bit. If you ever Google Florida 40-yard dashboard, we had quote-unquote like 10 players that ran sub 4.3, and then none of them ran sub 4.3 at the combine. So Mickey Murati's been known to, you know, boost some kids' confidence with his numbers. But even if he's even remotely close, it's hard to, you can't fudge a 225 bench test. So absolute freak of nature. And I mean, when he comes out and goes to the NFL, he absolutely will be a combine warrior.
Yeah. It's super interesting, Zach, because like we started talking about Marvin Harrison when you started hearing from some people on the inside that he was putting up these kind of monstrous times. And we recorded that video of you talking about like long levered, the twitchiness, the freakiness. Then they came out and said that he will probably be the fastest starting receiver for Ohio State. And a lot of people were like, you know, because he doesn't really show that last year when we watched Marvin Harrison in the Rose Bowl, especially, we sat and watched him ball out. But you never sat back and thought, wow, he's fast as hell. Like, wow, he really burned that dude. It was more about he came across as a real polished, complete receiver.
Yeah, I mean, you watched him and said, this kid has talent, and he's Marvin Harrison's son, right? So he's polished, well coached, like runs good routes, like, and obviously Hartline is a great fundamental coach. So he also was getting polished up by a really good position coach.
Right.
So that's what you attributed it to, and what you've seen in this offseason, and what I've heard from inside the Woody Hayes is his body has just exploded in Mickey Marotti's offseason program. So the interesting debate will be about week four is who is wide receiver one at Ohio State? And that's insane to think about.
That's insane to think about. I mean, to think about a kid that's going into his sophomore year of college, Zach, posting numbers like that. That's ridiculous. I want to ask you some of your workout worries from your room. Did you ever have a guy that posted that kind of workout numbers?
I mean, I had a bunch of guys that tested well. That's about as freaky as I've seen. I mean, Paris Campbell tests well and everything. He was strong. He could run. He could do everything. Curtis Samuel was a genetic freak. I've always had guys that could test dudes, well, yeah, and run well, but I don't know that I have ever had a receiver like Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, because honestly, when you look at it, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, as good as they are, and they are extremely good, they also get the benefit of being a product of Ryan Day's offense, right?
Correct.
You look at other offenses around the country, or even Urban's tenure and Urban's offense, like there's been some freak of nature receivers like Percy Harvin, like Curtis Samuel, guys I just mentioned, Terry McLaurin, that test off the charts, but they didn't have years or seasons like you're watching now because of the style of offense. And Marvin Harrison Jr. will absolutely have better stats than anyone I ever coached. And part of it will be because he might be better than anyone I've ever coached, but also it's because they're getting fed. I mean, they are sitting down to eat and getting delivered filet mignon. Like, it is not, they're not getting hamburgers and gotta, you know, go back to work. They are getting filet and lobster in that receiver room.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's funny because you floated out the generational word about Marv going back a little bit. And this is now like generational athletic numbers. So you think, I mean, obviously we're going to talk about like Brian Hartline developing him. But again, this is like blowing dust off a diamond. Like, he's already a big ass diamond. Like, how much, think how much polish does he need? And so now with generational, you know, a generational gene pool and your dad's a Hall of Famer, like you have the pro pedigree, like we are going to be watching something very, very special with him. And it's a part of a very, very talented room. Zach 3 came out with their top 10 list of, you know, ranking wide receiver rooms. And the top four, because it reads as this: Alabama at number 4, the transfer you, Texas at 3, USC at 2, and then Ohio State at 1. How close is USC to Ohio State in terms of being the best receiver room in the country, if you had to project today?
Well, you know, it's close. It really is. I don't think they have anyone the level of JSN and Marvin Harrison Jr., but Ohio State fans get blinders on when they talk about Emeka Egbuka and Julian Fleming and Cam Babb, guys that are completely and wildly unproven. And that's not to say they're not going to be, you know, in the conversation for top whatever receiver in the country, because they have a lot of talent, but you're basing that on recruiting bullshit and off-season articles. Like, there is nothing that tells you outside of some kickoff returns that Emeka Egbuka is going to enter this chat, right? You have to go out and see it. He played above average in the Rose Bowl. I wouldn't say he was dominant or prove that he's some national name yet.
In fact, in that big catch, you referenced that he didn't run a very good route.
He didn't. And so don't get me wrong, high ceiling, a lot of room for improvement and a lot of time in the offseason to do that. And now with training camp, he probably will develop into what Ohio State fans hope he is. But you can't say he is that right now. And you look at USC, you talk about transfer U being Alabama. USC is ridiculous. Jordan Addison transferred over from Pitt. Taj Washington coming in from Memphis to USC. Terrell Bynum coming in from Washington. They got the kid Brennan Rice from Colorado. Mario Williams coming from Oklahoma. Williams, keep in mind, he was a freshman last year at Oklahoma, and he was only fourth on the team in receiving. But he's one of the high, you know, he's a top 15 graded receiver in the country. So they have a ton of, implanted talent now in that receiver room. But I would contend that none of them have done it on a national level yet,
exactly,
right? Jordan Addison was really good at Pitt, and we'll get into that conversation in a minute, but it was fucking Pitt. He was all they had. They had an NFL quarterback, quote unquote, in Kenny Pickett, and he just force-fed Jordan Addison. So USC has an unbelievable pool of talent with experience. I mean, Taj Washington had 100 receptions for 1,400 yards and 7 touchdowns. So Tyrell Bynum had almost 1,000 yards at Washington with 65 receptions, right? So they have guys that have played a lot of football in comparison to that third receiver. Do they have a receiver as good as Jackson Smith and Jigba? We'll settle that debate in a minute. Do they have a receiver as good as Marvin Harrison Jr.? I don't think even close. Mm-hmm. But it's that next receiver. They might be 6 deep where Ohio State is 2 or 3 proven deep, right?
This list is interesting, Zach, because it has Ohio State 1, like I said, and then the next 3 schools, they're all bringing in big transfers in the wide receiver room. So it's like our room is homegrown. It's organic. And then the number 5 schools, Virginia, their room is homegrown as well. But, you know, some schools not on this top 10 list that I've been hearing all offseason about good their weapons is. Miami's not on this list, nowhere to be found. Florida's not on this list, nowhere to be found. And there's so much talent in the area, it's like, dang, like, we would hope you have a top-end receiver room. But I just find it interesting because one of the things every single team swears they have is good wide receivers. Because put it on tape, it's like, okay, there's freak 5'10", 5'11 athletes everywhere. But this on-3 list was interesting because it has Fresno State, Stanford, and Wake Forest all ahead of schools like Michigan and Penn State.
Yeah, because you look at it, like, who does Michigan have? Mm-hmm. Right, the best receiver on their roster, in my opinion, is Andrell Anthony, and he didn't do much last year outside of the Michigan State game. So Michigan has some talent, but you can't put them on that list. Mm-hmm. Who are you going to say Michigan has right now that is, you know, a household name at receiver? They don't have one, right? So I mean, should they be up there over fucking Fresno? Maybe. I mean, but now we're splitting hairs, and I don't really care to talk about that because I want to talk about nationally relevant groups. Fresno's not a nationally relevant group. You start getting down to the 10th best receiver room in the country. Honestly, I don't give a fuck. I'm here to talk about the national landscape and big-time players, and Michigan's not in that conversation, nor is Fresno.
Speaking of big-time players, is there a receiver in the USC room, Jordan Addison, that can measure up to the player that JSN is? What is your take after watching and studying both of their rooms?
Well, let's just end the debate right now, all right? You can look at receivers 100 different ways, and I broke it down every single way. I watched both of their tape last night and this morning, and then I broke down their analytics, right? And you start with deep balls, right? Jordan Addison, obviously, this is where he won the Biletnikoff, right? He was he had the most touchdowns on deep balls in the country at 10. Jackson Smith and Jigba was 10th at 6, right? Now, the caveat to keep in mind here is Jackson Smith and Jigba played with Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, 2 top, whatever, 12 picks. So that is what you have to keep in mind because Jackson Smith and Jigba got targeted 18 times on deep balls, 18. Jordan Addison got targeted fucking 40 times on deep balls, over twice as many. And he only had 4 more touchdowns. So he was a good deep ball receiver. He had an NFL quarterback throwing to him, and he was targeted all the fucking time on deep balls. But this is where you start to lose me on him being the best receiver in college football. When you look at intermediate routes, right? How often are receivers successful on intermediate routes? Jackson Smith and Jigba was 4th in Power 5 football. 85% of the time he caught the ball on throws from 10 to 20 yards. Jordan Addison, 64th in Power 5 football. 63% completion percentage. And you can't blame his quarterback. He was an NFL fucking quarterback.
Mm-hmm. And a Heisman finalist, I believe.
And a Heisman finalist. Then you go to short routes. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 13th in Power 5 football. 86% completion percentage. 44 of his catches. And what I always look for on short routes is, what do they do after the catch? He had a 7.5 yard after catch average on short routes. So he got an extra 8 yards every time. Jordan Addison averaged 5.5. So he was getting 2 less yards after catching a slant or whatever it is than Jackson Smith and Jigba.
It's crazy because the way they were talked about, Zach, it's talked about like Jordan Addison is kind of can do more after the catch than JSN. He's like a more explosive athlete, which is crazy.
Statistically, he can't. Mm-hmm. And the funniest part about it is on short routes, those easy routes where you have a guy like Jameson Williams, you have a guy like Jackson Smith and Jigba, throw him a slant, let him make a big time play. Jordan Addison was 121st in Power 5 football, 70% completion percentage. He was 3rd on Pitt's roster. He was the 3rd best receiver on throws under 10 yards on the Pitt team. Not like the third of 3. So that's just breaking down the length of throws and your repertoire, right? But then you get a little deeper. You say, all right, how good is a player? When teams play man coverage, do they fucking cook them, right? Do they cook DBs? Mm-hmm. Jackson Smith and Jigba was the number one receiver, the best receiver in Power 5 football versus man coverage. 90% grade against man coverage. 90%. Now, Jordan Addison was good. He was fourth, right? So he showed he could beat man coverage and win. But here's the wild stat for you about man coverage. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, when he faced man coverage, he only had one contested throw. One. And he caught it. It was a contested catch. Jordan Addison
Michigan game?
Had 11. He had 11 contested catches in man coverage, and he only caught six. The moral of that story is, when teams played man, Jaxon Smith-Njigba was only covered once. Jordan Addison was covered 11 times. So he can't get open as well as JSN versus man coverage.
Straps. He straps. I mean, if you're not creating separation, that's where the contested catches come in.
And then you go, all right, well, maybe he was a great zone receiver, right? He was 60th in Power 5 football versus zone coverage at a 71% completion percentage. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, top five, 85%. Mm. So I'm trying to find the point here where Jordan Addison was better than Jaxon Smith-Njigba, let alone anyone else at Ohio State last year. And here's a fun fact for you, Chris. Jordan Addison had 100 catches. 30 of those were on screen passes. 30 of his 100 catches.
Cheap yards.
And then here's my coach's analytical breakdown of why
film,
why it was different, right? Why Jordan Addison had the year he had and Jaxon Smith-Njigba was an afterthought? Because I look at something called PDE, right? Production distributed elsewhere, right? The other two receivers you're playing with, what was their production, right? Pitt, their other two receivers, had 74 catches, 1,100 yards, and 9 touchdowns. When you look at Jaxon Smith-Njigba's other two receivers, they had 135 catches, 2,000 yards, and 25 touchdowns, which means that the PDE, the difference, was Ohio State distributed 61 catches elsewhere to the other two starting receivers, 875 yards, and 16 touchdowns were distributed to the other two receivers. So just for fun, let's pretend that JSN went to Pitt. The same distribution model happened at Ohio State. Last year, Jaxon Smith-Njigba would have had 156 catches, 2,481 yards, and 25 touchdowns. He would have rewritten every fucking book. So,
yo.
But just you wait, Chris. Let's not stop there. Jaxon Smith-Njigba versus Jordan Addison. JSN had more yards on less catches, a higher yak, 8.3 yak versus 6.6 yak. A higher yards per route run. Yards per route run is your production as a receiver. Every time you run a route, how many yards do you average? Jaxon Smith-Njigba averaged 4.01 yards for every route he ran. 2.9 for Jordan Addison. He had better hands, 5.9% drop percentage. At Jordan Addison had a 10% drop percentage. He was covered less in man coverage, and when he was covered, he was better at catching those contested catches. 90% contested catch percentage. Jordan Addison was 55. The only reason Jordan Addison is considered a better receiver or was given the award last year is because he had 8 more touchdowns and Jaxon Smith-Njigba had 2 first-round receivers playing with him. That's the only reason. You can find nothing, no clip, no film, no analytic that tells you that Jordan Addison is better than Jaxon Smith-Njigba other than he played at Pitt and no one else was fucking on offense. That's it. Debate over.
Better route runner, more separation, better contested catches, better after the catch. Am I missing anything?
I mean, what the fuck else do you want to look at? I mean, I bet if you hand him the ball in the backfield, Jaxon Smith-Njigba would be better than that. I bet you he's better at washing his hair. I bet you he's better in fucking math class. I can't find anywhere that Jaxon Smith-Njigba doesn't whoop Jordan Addison's ass in anything. You want to play basketball? You want to play baseball? His brother's a fucking pro baseball player. I bet you he's a better baseball player. Like, find anything. You want to play chess? You want to play checkers? Like, what the fuck do you want to do? JSN will beat Jordan Addison at it.
And JSN wasn't even a Blitnikoff finalist. Just so you know.
Wild.
Just so you know. And I think, did he make first team all Big Ten? Because I know there were some issues with people spelling names wrong or whatever. I think he was second or third team Big Ten instead of being first team Big Ten, which is crazy, man, because like JSN is in for a really big season. And when you think about it in a vacuum, it's like they're both deemed as kind of slot receivers at the next level. And yet JSN can do all the things you need to play outside or inside and has shown it. And Addison has not, even though Addison is the one playing outside and inside at Pitt. Right. Obviously, they're trying to funnel the ball.
And let me throw this caveat in again, because people don't understand how to just take honest evaluation and truth as what it is. Like, I think Jordan Addison is a really good football player. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really good receiver. Like, make sure you heard that statement. I'm not saying he's not any good. I'm saying he's not better than Jackson Smith and Jigba, because he's not. It's okay to be honest. It's not talking shit about the kid. He's a really good player. He's just not the best in the country, and that's okay.
Speaking of USC and kind of their NIL stuff, Zach, really weird stuff coming out. So they have been against the NIL collective, the school or the state. I don't know. You know, it's a mess over there. They have been against donors getting together and creating a collective to make sure these kids can get maximum value on things. And it doesn't matter. USC's collective went ahead, the student body and some donors got involved, and they have now launched a collective. Zach, why wouldn't the school want the collective? Is there any reasoning behind this?
I don't know. I mean, it could be old school thinking. It could be
thinking. It's like they've been pushing this woke agenda the entire time, talking about like players getting share of TV deals and this and that. And yet you don't want an NIL collective for your own university.
I mean, I can't wrap my brain around it, right? I mean, I'm sitting here trying to come up with reasons why it would be this way. And maybe it is the people involved. Maybe it's some boosters that they don't trust. I don't know the exact reason, because honestly, they need this. They need as much NIL support as they can get. That is the name of the game. So unless there's some concern that there's not the oversight they want or the character of people in that collective, I cannot wrap my brain around it, because the more collectives, the more money, the more deals, the better. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because like California led the charge about getting kids paid.
Right.
Like they led the charge. They're the ones that pushed for this. They're the ones that lay into making this happen. And yet now all over the country, guys are putting together these collectives. I mean, sure, there's shady people with money literally everywhere, Zach. Yeah, everywhere. But these NIL collectives is to get kids money. And everywhere else, they're doing a really good job of it. And now with USC, they're against it. And so now the student body, it's called the student body, right? That's the collective out there. This feels like they have bigger than just a Doug Archie issue. This feels like they have an army of Doug Archies out there trying to slow down this train.
Well, you this is what happens in college football, right? You look at Miami, you look at Ohio State, you look at USC after the Reggie Bush, Pete Carroll stuff. Like when a program realizes they lost institutional, they lacked institutional control, whether they got hit with that or not, when they realize that they didn't oversee that everyone was compliant, they knee-jerk reaction and go way overboard, right? They hire Doug Archie, they hire these people, and then it's like clamps everywhere, can't do anything because we don't want to get dinged again, right? And yeah, that's probably what has happened at USC. They're nervous that Pete Carroll 2.0 is coming to town, that they're gonna have some kid come in with a fucking mansion and invitations to the red carpet, banging Kim K. Like they don't want that stuff to happen because they've already been tarnished from it. And so it's that PTSD from getting in trouble that they're like, no, wait a minute, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Oh, let me think about this. I'm nervous. And it's just no way to live, right? It's like wearing a helmet when you drive in a car. Yeah. Like, okay, you can't be afraid of getting in a car wreck every time you get in a car just because you got in a fender bender 2 years ago.
Well, part of it, it's just funny because it's bullshit, Zach. Because, dog, are they going to act like we don't know Jordan Addison's story? Are they going to act like we don't know they're being tampered with? The NIL collective stuff, that organizes it. But the shady people are still going to get involved no matter what.
Well, and here's the other part, Chris. The other part to this is USC has been at the forefront of some shady shit, right? Whether they did anything illegal or not, Lincoln Riley had coaches on Oklahoma's payroll actively recruiting for USC. Like Jordan Addison came out and said he had talked to some people before he entered the portal. He didn't say USC, but he said he'd had conversations, right? So there was a lot of kind of smoke at the Coliseum. Exactly. And so honestly, what I think it is USC is trying to put out there that, listen, we don't want any part of this. We're not involved. Don't do this. Wink, wink. Don't start that collective. We don't want to do anything illegal. I'm leaving my garage door open.
Don't steal my car. The keys are in it.
Right. It's like, don't take that car that I want to get the insurance money for. Please. Here's the key on the tire.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's what it has to be, because Lincoln Riley's pushing hard, and the moves that they've been making, the transfers they've gotten in, the NIL deals that have been reported, whether there's sour grapes or they've come to fruition or not, it feels like USC is on the forefront of all of this. And this is kind of them saying like, no, we don't like this. Don't look over here. We are against it.
it's ridiculous. I mean, just Lincoln Riley as a whole. I mean, you and I kind of referenced when it was happening, he switched his whole philosophical belief on recruiting and to only recruiting California kids while he was still in season at Oklahoma, and then immediately went to USC and then had that class put together very quickly. Then you have Jordan Addison, $3 million and a house. It all comes out. It's like, oh, no, we don't believe in collectives. No. He's not coming out here for this. And shout out to good soldier Caleb Williams saying, oh, Jordan Addison would have came here with or without NIL deals. It wasn't about that. That was just an added bonus. When there's all the smoke about him not being thrilled with some promises not being met. At least a collective, you have to meet the promises.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you need, right? You can't promise these kids shit without a strong collective organization or, honestly, a couple of them, like Ohio State and some of these schools have, where those kids are going to get money.
Facts. They're going to get theirs no matter what, and everybody knows. And it's funny when a school comes out with a stance, the school's against it. You and I both know Lincoln Riley is begging for it behind the scenes. Like,
the only person I believe that is against it in the country is Dabo Swinney. I don't think anyone else is against it, because Dabo's just such a fucking dunce. He's a dunce. That's a great word for Dabo Swinney. Dabo the dunce.
Yeah, I'm sure he would hate to know what's going on or what was going on over there at New Spring Church. I'm 100% positive of that.
No, anyway. Dabo knows. That's why he's so against it. He's like, damn it, they're fucking with my system, man. I had a good little system here with the church, and they couldn't catch me, and I was winning, and now they're going to make that shit legal. I don't like it, man. I'm a Christian, man.
It's like when you have the PlayStation 2 and you're the only kid in your neighborhood with the PS2, and then all of a sudden the PS4 comes out, PS5 comes out, and everyone's got the new ones, and they don't want to play your house anymore because you won't get the new system.
Right.
But it's okay. It's because you don't believe in the number three. Zach, I want to talk a little bit about some NIL stuff. I want to talk about Nico and Tennessee. So I guess the NIL offices, the NIL collective offices, the phones are ringing. People are calling. And I've known about this for quite some time, that the some of the Tennessee checks may or may not have dried up. So the fund pool is down, because months ago, when I was back in my mom's basement, like 5 or 6 months ago, when the Nico kid committed, there was a lot of momentum. Like, they were going to get a lot of commitments, because when you add a five-star quarterback that everybody wanted, including Ohio State offered, and who I think is the top quarterback of the country, we came on the show and said this could be a program changer, because we were hearing from Tennessee that they had the money, they had the excitement, they had the coaching staff, and now they had the five-star quarterback to move things forward. Well, now, Zach, the food's out of the microwave, and it doesn't look that good. I'm looking at their recruiting rankings. He's the only five-star kid they've landed. Their only true receivers is a kid from North Carolina, ranked outside the top 500. And the other receiver is ranked outside the top 1,000. Now, they do have some athletes in there that are probably going to play receiver, but none of them are ranked in the top 100. Zach, what the heck?
Yeah, I mean, it's – I'm going to put it on a wait-to-see list, right? I can't believe that the way Tennessee had so much momentum and attacked it early, that they won't rally some shit going, especially if they can have some success on the field. But it is concerning, right? You get a five-star all-everything quarterback committed. Receiver commitments always follow. Like, they always do. That's right. What happens. You get a big-time quarterback. Receivers are like, damn, they got Nico. I want to play there, right? And all of a sudden, they look at Tennessee a little differently. And for them to have not parlayed that into success at receiver of all positions – There's a red flag there. The alarms aren't sounding, but there's some red flags, like lots of them.
Well, I feel dumb because my dumb ass was in Twitter spaces telling Texas fans that the real UT is Tennessee, and now they can't recruit. And it's like, look, Texas landed Arch, who I don't think is the player that Nico is, but they got a five-star running back yesterday. I mean, they've been able to get some receivers and get some offensive linemen. It's been the opposite for Tennessee. How much of a role do you think that investigation and kind of the looming NCAA stuff has kind of had in halting the Tennessee hype train?
Well, Tennessee fans were all in my mentions when I said it's a major, major deal in recruiting, because they self-imposed a penalty, and Tennessee fans don't understand that doesn't mean anything. The NCAA certainly still has the option and probably will give them additional sanctions outside of their self-imposed sanctions. That's how it works, and I know Volunteer Nation, the Vol Navy doesn't want to hear it, but that's real. And so that is definitely being used against them a ton in recruiting. And so that's why I think you look at Nico, you look at some of these kids they have gotten, that NIL money secured the deal, and they were like, fuck it. If we get sanctions, at least I'm getting paid bank. But it's hard to do that for 25 kids, right? You can't have that negativity or potential negativity. We won't even know until after signing day what the real situation is. So that definitely is hurting them. It's definitely hurting them. Other schools are using that against them in an incredibly big way.
Can they remedy this though, Zach? Like, can they get things back on track? Because you and I both think they have a very good team. If they feel it on the play, if they win 10 games, do recruits sit back and be like, you know what? They are heading in the right direction. And maybe I will go join Nico.
Well, and you know, I think it's going to take some success on the field. I think it's going to take, you know, maybe rumors to start to come out that the NCAA is satisfied, or mm-hmm. the bigger thing is they need to sell the shit out of that. Like, listen, we're in direct communication with the NCAA. They're leaning towards no additional sanctions. They need to be selling that, and then they need to raise some money. I mean, that's what it is. They got to raise some big checks because they have to combat this narrative that other schools are pushing. That's not a lie, that there's a lot of question marks at Tennessee. And the good way to get over that, cashish, dollar bills, y'all.
That's the way to combat it. Zach, if you're you're Nico's dad, right? And you've kind of seen the recruiting trail, how things have gone, haven't really landed any receivers. There are maybe some teams that they're looking for a quarterback. Do you have Nico call around, or do you call around other coaches just to keep options open?
Oh, I'm keeping options open for a top flight quarterback. Mm-hmm. My options are always open. And I mean, especially with the unknown at Tennessee, right? Like, if he was committed to Ohio State, committed to Alabama, and he's out there, honestly, once you shut it down at a place like that, I am full-fledged all the way in, and I'm going to be the best recruiter that Ohio State or Alabama has. Right. I'm going to be actively recruiting everyone that we want. If I'm at Tennessee, I'm feeling that out a little bit. Like, I may be committed, but when we go out to the sports bar to watch a game, I might check out the bartender, you know? Like, I'm committed, but I'm not really sold yet.
You know who has a big bag and wouldn't mind adding a nice little five-star quarterback? Texas A&M.
Yeah, that's a fact.
I'm just saying. That's a fact. I know Jimbo got money. They got that old school, oil money. So, Zach, I want to talk a little bit about Notre Dame. But before we get into it, Notre Dame game is X amount of days away. Get your squares.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's throw that up there. I think we have 70 sold right now. I got to double check. So there's 30 squares left, maybe a couple less than that. But our square board for the Notre Dame game, it's $100 a square. You get a chance to win $3,000 on the final score. It's a one-game shot, big money board. We're going to announce and launch our Buckeye full season board probably in a week. We got to get this one full first. Once it sells out, it's sold out. $100 a square, Venmo to Cameron Media. The link is in the bio down below. You get a chance to win $500 at the first quarter, $500 at the third quarter, $1,000 at halftime, $3,000 final score, a total in $5,000 in prizes. So go on, shoot your $100 over, get your square, and get your chance to win three stacks, three large on the final score in the Notre Dame game.
That's big. Speaking of the Notre Dame game, before we get into the topic of it, John A., take the over in the opener, is at 58, and I think I'll take a few games for the defense to get in order. Would you take that over-under? Where are you at on that? You over?
I haven't researched it yet, but just as we talked about on our Patreon, the link's below, Chris, yeah. I will have all my gambling handicapping pick. Just a side note, we are building this massive fucking model that has been super successful in baseball props, and we're going to convert it over to college football and NFL football. So I'm going to leverage that with my research and my knowledge and film study, and I'll be able to tell you if I take the over and under. Knee-jerk reaction, I would take the over because I think Ohio State is going to be able to score a shitload of points. And I am a little more confident in Ohio State's defense, but I don't think it's going to be a top 10, perfect, top five right. defense game one. I think they're going to do better than people might, or I guess people outside of Ohio State fans would think. But I think Notre Dame will score some points. I see that score being like, 35-21, which what puts them at 56. I didn't see the over-under. What was it, 58? It's about fucking right. So I don't know. I would lean the over, but that's with no research and really just my instant reaction based on what I know today.
Yeah, no, I that's where I'm at with it too. I think it'll be over, but you know, that's what Vegas wants. Vegas wants us to knee jerk and bet on it. So we got to sit down, have clear minds, clear eyes, and get to
it. But listen, please don't bet on it right now. There's so much that can happen in the next 22 days. Just wait. People can get hurt. You know, things can develop, like offenses. You know, there's so much that can happen. Please don't place a bet right now.
Hang tight. And with that $10, you could be a part of our Patreon. It, you know,
there you go.
Taking that super chat to the next level. Zach, my guy Tyler sent me a really good question. A couple things for Notre Dame that you're a coach, so you know about this, and I'm going to let you explain it. The Notre Dame game, for example, it's a home game against a top 10 opponent at night. There's going to be a ton of recruits going. What does that day entail from Ryan Day, kind of wake up to game time?
Well, the best thing about night games is you have so much time before you go to the stadium, right? Like you don't have to wake up early. You have literally, they have like a 3-hour break where they're in their rooms, like just relaxing, watching college football and just, you know, getting off their feet. So you have that huge window. Whereas a coach, if you have big time recruits in, you can spend 3 hours on game day with recruits, go walk on campus. You can do whatever you want. And it's massive. Those noon games are tough, right? Because you have no time in the morning. You're going. Then after the game, you want to go back with your family. Those kids want to go hang out with recruits. So you don't get much time with them. Night games are the best. One, because the atmosphere is out of this fucking world. Two, it's a great game, big time atmosphere, big time opponent. And three, you have that 3-hour window in between walkthroughs and meetings and your team dinner. And you have a nice chunk of time where you could just spend it with recruits. The tough part for Ryan Day is he's also preparing for a game, yeah, right? It's easy for the wideout coach. You already installed your game plan. Your players are ready. You have your call sheets typed up. You have your folder all set. You're all ready to go. You got 3 hours to kill, right? If you got recruits in, spend it with recruits. If you don't, go fucking take a nap. Whatever you want to do. Go home and see your kids. Whatever you want to do in that 3 hours. But for Ryan Day, he's prepping to win the game still. He's still working the game in his mind. He's got to call an offense. He's got to manage the entire team. He's the CEO. So it's a lot harder for the head coach or coordinator than it is for a position coach. But those night games, it's the only time I wanted to bring kids in for an official visit. I would bring kids in from Wisconsin at night, Penn State at night, Nebraska at night 1 year. Those are the games you want to bring kids in.
Does the buzz ever get too much? Like you're worrying about your players, the recruits, the media, a bunch of other distractions, it being a primetime game. Does that make it a little bit different, like in terms of primetime television?
Part of the circus, man. That's what's fucking amazing about big time games, right? It's different than playing Akron at noon, right? There's way more people on campus. There's always RVs at Ohio State, but you know, the college game day setup is right outside the Blackwell, big noon kickoffs across the street. Like there's just a different buzz and atmosphere. And in night games, I used to always take a walk on campus in that 3-hour break with a recruit, without a recruit, didn't matter, because I wanted to see the middle school kids throwing the football and while their parents are getting all fucking drunk before the game at a tailgate, like, and just see the atmosphere that is college football. That's so cool. There's nothing like it, nothing. And so you go on those big time atmospheres to bring in recruits, that just adds to the circus, that just adds to the fun, because you know, if that atmosphere is electric, if you win the game, being in the post game locker room, like that is a difference maker in recruiting. So I'm trying to bring every kid in.
You ever get recognized on those walks going around, or no, not really?
Oh, absolutely. Okay.
Like Case
I was
Keenan
fortunate
style.
That I created a brand in Zone 6 that people would be like, hey, Zone 6.
Zone 6. That's
I'd be like, hey,
dope.
Go Bucks.
Oh, shucks, go Bucks. I want to ask on the flip side, Zach, like, if you're away on a night game, how is that experience? Or is it kind of just you're in the hotel room the entire time before the game? Is it tough to get loose and feel comfortable?
It's very similar. You're just behind enemy lines, right? Like the same thing I just talked about, except all those fucking people want to kill you. So, but it's still as a competitor, like you love it, right? You love the fact that all these people are showing up and you want to just take their life in front of their home crowd. It's like the movie Gladiator where he comes out, Russell Crowe comes out and just kills everybody and looks up like, are you not entertained? That's what it is when you're on the road. Like you want to go beat the shit out of them and look up like, yeah, bitches, we have arrived. We came to your place.
Well, I have a question. This reminds me of like a philosophical question, put it in college football terms. Would you rather win the championship in front of your fans or win the championship at an away game where everyone's been booing you and throwing shit at you for four quarters?
Nah, you always love it in your fans. You want, just the crowd noise, the reaction, the emotion. I mean, it's fun to take the wind out of someone's sails on the road, but there's nothing like beating somebody like a big time opponent in front of your crowd. Nothing like it.
I asked one of my homeboys about it, and I had the same answer as you. And he was like, "Nah, man, if people are throwing stuff at me, I want to win it at their crib." I'm like, "Bro, like, what are you gonna do afterwards? You're not gonna go party anywhere afterwards. I mean, you could, but you'd rather party at home with your boys." He said, "I'll party at home when I get home." So I told him, "Yeah, you're a real life hater. Real life hater is what that is." Zach, it's about that time of the show. Ryan Day had a press conference today. He touched base with us beforehand. We're playing nice with them so we can hopefully get media credentials, you know, not just so big Chris Drew can walk around the Woody.
Everyone go D1. Comment at Buckeye Notes, Jerry Emig, and tell him Menace to Sports wants credentials.
It's funny, Doug, because I think they changed the sheet this year for you. I don't know if you looked at it, but it used to be organizations would have to apply themselves, but now they're making individuals apply. So you could send someone from your company and maybe not go yourself. Just float it out there. But anyway, yeah, go tag Jerry. We want credentials. Big Chris Drew wants to be out there with one eyebrow and all. Coach speak. Coach, what does it mean? I got Ryan Day. He talked for about an hour to reporters. They opened up practice for a longer time to media, which was really cool. And he had a couple things to say about this. I'm going to start with Sonny Styles, someone who we don't think is going to play this year. When asked about Sonny, Ryan Day had this to say. "For someone who's supposed to be in high school right now, he's looking darn good. He's being coached pretty hard, but is off to a wonderful start. What does this mean? Could we see him this year?"
I mean, you absolutely could. Like I've said, the learning curve for an incoming player is always, it's hard. And so freshmen don't normally play a lot. If he's elite and they accelerate that learning curve, he might contribute. Like, it's so rare for a freshman to be an impact player. So what that means is they're really pleased with where he's at on his career journey, right? He's taking to everything quickly. He's playing well and executing well for a freshman. That's the caveat, right? You have to say that, for a freshman. And they're really pleased with his future and the potential that he has and what he could become. Now, when he gets there, that's still an unknown. It could be in a month, it could be in 3 months, it could be in a year, but they have seen enough to know they believe he's going to get there.
He's absolutely going to get on special teams, right? Like, he's going to play special teams at least for three or four.
Oh, you would
games.
Imagine so. Mm-hmm. And that's where you start to see an impact, right? A guy like Sonny Styles is out there on kickoff team or God forbid punt team. If he's on punt team, he's going to be a great player because of how they run their special teams at Ohio State. So yeah, absolutely. He might play and make an impact, like I said, but I don't think you can sit here and say, "Oh, maybe he'll be a starter." Like, calm down. He's a freshman. Like, give him a year.
If he blocks a punt, the Ohio State fan base is going to treat him like he's the Heisman.
As they should.
Yeah. Whoa there, partner. Anyway, the next little bit, when Day was asked about the amount of starting battles, he said this: "Probably just a handful of true starting battles." But Day did go on to say a lot of guys will be rotated at a number of positions. Only a handful of battles?
Yeah, stupid question. Whoever asked that question is fucking idiot. There's always only a handful of starting position battles, right? I mean, we knew Paris Johnson was going to start at left tackle. We knew DeJuan Jones would start at right tackle. We knew Luke Weipler would be the center. We knew CJ Stroud. I mean, what the fuck?
What about the defense, though?
I mean, yeah, there's more than a handful. We knew Cameron Brown and Denzel Burke were going to be the starting corners. We knew Josh Proctor was going to be the starting safety. We knew that, I guess, the D-line and linebackers were the ones we didn't know, and those are starting to work themselves out. I mean, I don't think that's revolutionary. And I'm sure when he was asked that, he was like, "Jesus Christ, what do you want me to say? Like, you want me to tell you exactly? There's four starting battles." No, that's coach speak bullshit. You learn nothing. You asking that question only made everyone dumber.
It's funny because Knowles gives much more sound bites. He'll put his balls on the table more. And Ryan Day's more like, you can tell he's a little annoyed to be there. Does a good job of kind of hiding it. He was asked about Chip, who just lost his black stripe. "He certainly has a lot of skills, works hard. The guys respect him. But as soon as we feel like he's ready, he'll go play." This one kind of puzzled me a little bit.
I think that is they maybe think he's not good enough yet. Right. Mm-hmm. When I hear that, it's like, okay, he's trying to talk positively about a kid that, I'm not going to say he struggled, but he's not there yet. And he's not in the mix. And so they're hoping that he gets in the mix because they see some skill and they say, all right, this kid's got a chance to get in the mix, but right now he's not.
I'm wondering about it because he did just lose his black stripe. obviously he's a transfer. He's multiple coaches have said that he's the strongest and the fastest of the linebackers, which is impressive. So is it like a transitional thing because he is a running back? Is he not understand the field of the game so much? Like if you had to guess, what do you think is going to be the biggest hangup in him getting on the field?
Well, I mean, it's twofold, right? One, he's switching positions. Two, he's learning not only positions, he's switching sides of the ball. He's in an entirely new scheme. I guess it would be new to no matter who he played for, even if it's Arizona State. And he's also at a place with way more talented players. So this is a massive formula of reasons why he might not be ready yet. And, you know, who knows? He might blossom into something, but this is not to be expected, right? Yeah. The kid was a running back at Arizona State last year. And he just went to fucking Ohio State, a top three program in the country.
Which is different than being a running back at Ohio State, which Steele did. I mean, obviously, like, he's going up against those guys every day. And so the talent.
Yeah, and Steele also was a running back a year and a half ago, not 8 months ago.
You're right. Day was asked about what worries him or keeps him up at night about the offense. His response, not one thing. He then paused for a little bit, went on to try to, like, take the balls back off the table and say he just wants to run and throw the ball because balance is important.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Ryan Day is confident that he can put up points and win games on offense. And that's why initially it was like he's so confident about what they have and his ability to develop and call this offense that he was like, I'm not fucking worried about anything. Then he thought about it for a minute. It was like, well, I would like to be able to run the ball well also, because in his mind, it's like, I'm not fucking worried about shit. If we're struggling running it, I will throw it 60 times with the number one quarterback in the country and we will score 50 points. So I ain't worried about shit. But in reality, he knows and that a balanced attack is a better attack.
Mm-hmm. On the tight end room, Ryan Day had some comments on, was asked about G. Scott's transition, which is weird because we're over a year since the transition was announced. He's flashed for sure. He's just grinding right now. There's certainly been some really good signs.
Again, not ready to be a major contributor at tight end, but they see the athletic ability. They see the value. They see the mismatches. They see that in time he could develop into one of those, you know, prototypical H-back movement tight ends. But it's just he's getting coached. He's getting developed. And they see the freakiness. They see the twitchiness. And they see the potential. But it's just not there yet.
A couple of other things of note that I thought were interesting, Zach. There's no long-term worry on Jordan Hancock's injury. They're just monitoring him. They have your boy Cam Brown on a pitch count, is what Day said, just to make sure that he's healthy. Obviously, you need those corners to be healthy going into the season. You need him.
I mean, like I said it yesterday, I'll say it again. Cam Brown and Denzel Burke need to be monitored and taken care of more so than anyone on this team. Because you lose one of them and you are in an absolute fucking shitstorm at corner for Ohio State. You need those two healthy and then you need to bring the other ones back. And that's why you need to move some guys from safety, move a kicker. Like you need guys that can take reps to take the reps off of Cam Brown and Denzel Burke's plate. Simple as that. You can't rep them to death or one of them might get hurt and now you're fucked.
You mentioned how they monitored Marshawn Lattimore, who had the hamstring injuries. Do you expect them to bring something back like that for a guy like Cam Brown, or if it's not like a consistent injury spot, you don't really do it?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's not a chronic hamstring guy, so they won't do that specifically, but they will spare no expense. I mean, they spent $40,000-$50,000 on the system to monitor Marshawn Lattimore so he could stay healthy for his entire year, his last year. So they will spare no expense to make sure those kids get everything they need to stay healthy. And then, you know, outside of that, you can't help but a freak accident or whatever happens. But they're going to try to make sure they do everything they can to keep those kids healthy.
Ryan Day struck me as very confident. And it's funny because he's like, at times he's put some big expectations out there for the defense. But at times I've also noticed him trying to like scale it back almost, maybe not have this team get lost in the hype. Zach, this team's basically already been crowned a playoff spot. This would worry me, except for the fact of how disrespected this team was kind of last year when they were pushed around and all the chatter about. So I've never seen a team come off a season like that where they've been called soft and this and that, and still the expectations are, to me, as high as they've been since 2019.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the reality. I mean, Ryan Day right now has all the tools in the world to keep this team with an edge, and everyone knows it. Everyone knows he has all that. Everyone knows the talent he has. Everyone knows that he's doing that. So people are hyping the team up because they know what's going on behind closed doors. But make no mistake about it. There is a, you ever been to a championship game? The team wins the national championship. And what happens? The team goes up on a stage, and Urban used to talk about this all the time. And what do? They raise the ropes. They raise ropes up in a perimeter around the stage because none of this riffraff can get in. The team is in here celebrating a championship. You guys stay out there. There is ropes around this program right now. And Ryan Day is doing a great job of keeping this us mentality. Like, what's inside the ropes is what matters. And he's keeping an edge inside the ropes. Fuck what the media is saying. They said you were soft last year. Now they're saying you're great. Fuck them. They don't, it's not about them. This is about us. We got something to prove. We have a chip on our shoulder, and we got to go out and fucking do it week in, week out.
I'm really excited. Like, I'm really excited. That just gave me chills, dog. Got to chill out with all that. Like, I'm trying to get through a show. He did have a comment about your boy Justin Fry. He's like, he's one of the few offensive line coaches I've been around that kind of sees outside the tackles. Justin Fry is going to be a big time coach wherever he goes next. Like, this is not his ceiling, and I'm really excited.
Justin Fry is going to be a head coach one day, and a really fucking good one. And I knew that back when we were young working together. I mean, he always wanted to learn about the pass game because the O-line coaches are not usually like that. They live in this world of fat guys, and they don't care about everything else. But Justin's so fucking good and so high level that he wants to understand the pass game so he can better understand what his guys need to do. Like, because Stud used to get pissed all the time about, like, why the fuck are we holding the ball that long? And it's like, well, Stud, this is a three-level pass. Like, this one takes a little bit longer. And he was like, fucking nobody else holds the ball that long in the country. And you're like, yes, they do. every now and then you got to. But he didn't understand it. And Justin wants to understand it so he can coach his guys better. And for his long-term success, he wants to understand football better, you know, from sideline to sideline, not just hash to hash.
And I love that from Justin Fry. Very good sign. Want to get into a couple super chats, then we're going to end the show. So if you have super chat questions, now is the time to drop them. I'm going to start with my guy, Ty. Ty wants to know, shout out to the two, for the two, do alternative jerseys actually juice players up? Go Bucks.
Absolutely. Players love alternate jerseys. I mean, they love whatever it is. They love to be swaggy. You know, players love to have all the drip, as they say, as my 12-year-old says. They love the drip. So anytime you're wearing black jerseys, gray jerseys, you know, alternate whites, different helmets, like, it's just a new opportunity to, it's like when you get a new outfit, right? You have your clothes, you love your clothes, you love your wardrobe, you love your closet. You get that fresh new fit, you're like, ooh, I'm feeling clean today. Like, that's what it is. It's just a little change, right? A little change up.
Did players ever talk to you like, damn, like, look at their uniforms? That shit's hard. Like, I remember thinking, like, when Oregon came out to the Rose Bowl with the chrome helmets, the first time I'd seen it, I was like, whoa, that goes crazy. Did players come to you like, Coach Smith, we need these? Or no, not really?
No, I mean, because there's nothing I could do. That shit's, I mean, there's no, I mean, Urban or Ryan might have some impact. That those decisions are so high up. That is Phil Knight meeting with fucking, you know, gurus that make those decisions. As a receiver coach, you got no say. No, I mean, no say.
Shout out to my guy, Michael, for throwing the five. His question is as this, watching Jim Knowles' progression through his career, could he now be interviewing for the NFL, or is Ohio State his ceiling? Good question.
I mean, so the NFL is such a different game. You need to have probably three, you know, twice the defense that Jim Knowles has in the NFL. And I mean, he seems like a brilliant coach, so he probably could do it. I don't know that he's ever going to explore that route. And I don't know him personally, so I don't know, but he's, seems like he's really satisfied coordinating defensive football in college.
Yeah, and he always talks about, like, the growth of young men being kind of why he does this.
He seems that square-jawed, wants to, almost militaristic, wants to run, you know, develop kids, develop his culture, and in the NFL, it's not like that. So he seems like a college coordinator to me, which is not a, that's not, there's no disrespect there. It's just a different style, a different, different career, honestly.
You and I, when we would host Twitter Spaces, we talked a while ago with a couple of the guys that were NFL players, Garon Conley, Tyvus Powell, all of them, and they said, when you get to the NFL, nobody's developing you. They're teaching you playbooks.
That's all it is. That's all the NFL is. I've said it forever. Like, and I used to tell my players, like, when you get to the NFL, you're going to text me or call me and be like, this shit's wild. Like, I don't even get coached. And it's true. Mm-hmm. You go to the NFL, they don't coach technique, fundamentals. They teach you plays and offense. It may give you a tip here and there, especially if it's a guy who's played, you know, like whoever that may be. Like, every now and then they'll give you some tips, but it's not intense development like it is in college at all.
Chad Hamilton, thank you for the 10. How many players have been flashing and then have that one play that just makes everything click and then they put it together?
It's, you know, it's called a small victory. And we used to talk about it a lot. It's a psychological thing, like where you have that moment, right? Maybe games on the line. And we used to try to create them, right? Scrimmages on the line. What kid needs a small victory, right? Whoever it is, that kid, if he has that big, small victory, it might catapult him into a different stratosphere. And so you try to create those in practice to try to get a kid to take that next step. And it happens all the time. You see it all the time. It could be a day. It could be a rep. It could be a segment, like a 7-on-7 segment, whatever it is, when it all clicks and that kid makes that play, right? In that pressure cooked moment, mm-hmm. all of a sudden the light switch turns on and then he starts making them more consistently. Then all of a sudden, some bitch, he's making them all the time. So it always starts with a small victory. That one play that gives a kid the confidence, maybe reaffirms what the coaches are teaching him that he can do it and this is how to do it. It always stems from one play.
Heard that. Our guy Frank wants to know, can you give us some insight on the walk-on wide receiver Xavier Johnson? He's liked a lot. He's been getting a lot of praise. He made a lot of plays during the spring game and that spring open session. I don't really know too much about him.
I honestly don't know. I mean, I know exactly who he is. I've watched him in the spring game. I've watched a bunch about him. I think he's a really talented walk-on. I don't think he's like CJ Saunders, but you know, he's a guy they probably could put in the game late in the game that'll do his job and get open and catch the ball. And he's a good player, but I mean, I don't think he's in the conversation with these other kids we've talked about.
Yeah. I think he's a good player. I don't know how much he'll play. Like you said, the receiver room is really deep. Play somewhere else, and probably start somewhere else, kind of the way he's been talked about at least. But you know, it's a really tough thing to gauge considering we're not at practice with them every single day. But we do know who kind of are getting the starters reps and kind of, yeah, that's where we're at. Love the kid though. Love program kids like that. The Rod Farmer, one of the OGs of this platform, man. I love OG, Rod,
man.
Fucking OGs, man. Better program today, Kentucky or Michigan State?
I mean, he's got to go Kentucky just because of longevity. I mean, what's going on with Mel Tucker at Michigan State is relatively new. I mean, and I think Michigan State might have a better trajectory because they're not in the SEC. And Kentucky, I mean, what's happened there? Stoops has done a great job there. But right now I'd say Kentucky just because Michigan State is still building. Kentucky is trying to level up, but they've already built the foundation and they've done an unbelievable job. Kentucky is far better than it's been really since Joker Phillips was there a long time ago. So I would lean Kentucky, but I think Michigan State's pushing to pass that.
I read a crazy stat. I wish I had it up about Michigan State not landing a 4 or 5 star in 2 classes before Mel Tucker got there. And then them winning 11 games with that class because of the talent that Mel Tucker kind of overhauled and brought there. I think he's in. I got to double check that before I kind of speak on that as fact. Cause you know, Twitter's always the truth.
Always the truth.
Yeah. So no, I think Michigan State moving forward, probably currently, Kentucky probably has the better quarterback and probably a more soundly built team. And
I'm gonna throw it out. I'm not sold on that. I'm not sold that Will Levis is better than Peyton Thorne at all.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I guess I read the draft big boards every morning, right? You know, I wake
Mel
up.
Kiper.
I wake up and read a Monday morning quarterback every day of the week. Our guy Paul Moss, another one of the OGs. Good content, fellas. Most dominant defensive performance you've witnessed from the sideline and for and against. I mean, I think he's talking about individual players as well.
The most dominant performance I've ever seen was what our defense did in 2014, taking on the 3 Heisman Trophy candidates that were in New York City back to back to back and winning a national championship because they bottled them all up. By far was the most impressive. I mean, what Melvin Gordon was not able to do against our defense was astonishing. I mean, this kid was in New York City because he was so dominant all year. So that's the best I've ever seen as far as performances. I talked about Pat Pete at LSU. Glenn Dorsey was a motherfucker. Tyson Jackson. I mean, that LSU defense, when they had Tyson Jackson, Glenn Dorsey, I mean, they were just, I mean, it was, you watched them and it's like, how will we block them? How will we get open? Like, good God. So that's from the sideline. Now that Georgia defense last year is the best I've ever seen on film though.
Were you wowed? Speaking of just an individual, were you wowed by Khalil Mack when you saw him on the field when he was at Buffalo?
Absolutely. Now, I mean, it was a 1-game sample size. His film from the year before wasn't, I mean, I didn't know what his name. I'm the wideout coach. I didn't know they had a good defensive end, but I'm watching the game like, who is this freak show? Like, where did he come from? Does he play for the Bills? Did he get on the wrong bus? Like, how is this kid playing for Buffalo? So yeah, in game, I was like, holy shit. He intercepted that screen and outran Braxton Miller and Dontre Wilson. Like, what?
That shit is crazy. That's that
crazy.
We won that game, obviously, so we can laugh about it now. But Khalil Mack was a monster there. He was playing some linebacker there as well. Like, he was all over the place. Like, it was kind of insane to watch as you know, kid Chris Drew, you know, Twitter guru then. I was like, I need to play with them in NCAA literally right now. Like, right now. Before we get out of here, Christopher, do you have a question, or are you just throwing five for the platform? I appreciate you. But take that five to Patreon, man.
That's where it's at, man. Patreon. We got the custom RSS feed. We got the biggest thing is exclusive content, right? We're always going to have this show for the public. We're going to do some live stream stuff on the weekends, post game, Sunday call-in shows. But if you want to be on the other side of it, if you want to have that RSS feed with all content, even the shows that don't go out to public, it's all on Patreon. And there's different tiers. And like I mentioned, we've had a couple people invest in the platform already. If you want to invest in the platform, and you want your money to go directly into our marketing and growth budget, go on patreon.com/menacetosports and go invest and help us make this thing grow, man. Cause I'm trying to reinvest every penny I can into growth, because I think this is great. And I love the Menace Army, and I love where we're going. So if you want to be a part of it, come be a part of it, man. We're on Patreon. We're everywhere. And the group chat's popping now. Mm-hmm. So anyways, Chris, that's all I got. That's all you got. I know that for a fact. So Menace out.